Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. Since 2005, the Clinton Global Initiative has brought together the world's outstanding leaders and intellects in an effort to find solutions to the planet's great challenges. The effort has expanded and includes the Clinton Global Initiative University, CGIU, to include students, entrepreneurs, celebrities, and business people. Now in its sixth year, CGIU is being held at Washington University. 1,000 students from all states and 75 countries will gather to consider calls to action in five focus areas, including education, environment, and climate change, peace and human rights, poverty alleviation, and public health. I'm Don Marsh. Joining me in studio are participants in the weekend event, all from Washington University. Dr. Amanda Moore McBride is an associate professor and associate dean at the Brown School of Social Work. She is also director of the Gephardt Institute for Public Service, and she is spearheading the university's work with CGIU. DeAndrea Nichols is a student at the Brown School. She's actively involved in trying to make this a better place. Her project is DeServes, or Design Serves, which works to inspire kids in underserved neighborhoods. Dave Collier, a third-year law student, is working to improve civics literacy in St. Louis public schools. I thank you all for being with us. I know you're all bracing for a big weekend, but thanks for being with us. Amanda, let me start with you. Tell us something about Brown School's involvement in this and what this weekend is really all about.
Thank you. This is really about Washington University and its involvement not only locally in the St. Louis community, but in the world. We were so honored when CGI contacted us last year about the prospect of hosting CGIU here on our campus. They came to us and said, we are here because your students are known for their commitment to social change and their civic knowledge and their interest in making a difference in the world. So we were really pleased with that. My area of research is actually civic engagement, and I've been charged by the chancellor and our leadership to work with our students on that engagement through the Gephardt Institute for Public Service.
How is the weekend structured? What's the process?
I really appreciate how they have structured this. I think of it as a three-day workshop in many ways that has goals of networking, knowledge development, and then skill building. So thinking about 1,200 young social change agents from around the world coming together, the first evening, Friday evening, is an opening plenary where we will hear from accomplished social change agents and from the president himself. Then Saturday is actually segmented into two separate tracks, one around the five focus areas that you mentioned, where students had to identify what their projects and commitments were connected to. So students will go and hear about the latest innovations in public health or poverty alleviation. Then they also have the chance to take their commitments and put them in conversation with the skills necessary to accomplish them. So whether it's how do you raise money for your particular idea to how do you market your idea. I also appreciate the sessions that are about how do you galvanize people's interest around your ideas. So really, in many ways, kind of community organizing, which certainly has its social work roots. There are also two plenaries, one at the middle of the day where our own Claire McClaskill will be represented. And that one really is around politics, that this isn't just about charity. It's not just about doing good. It's about how do we actually create change. And that means the nonprofit, the public, and the private sectors all working together. So that's the noonday session. And then, of course, they end the day with the celebrity that you nodded to. So Stephen Colbert will be here to wrap up the day.
Well, if it has the word Clinton in the name, you'd think politics definitely would come into it at some place along the line.
That's right.
Dean Nichols, let me turn to you and just get some sense of what your interest is in all of this. We'll talk more about DeServes in a little bit. But what got you interested in this whole area?
Yes. So for myself, I grew up in a lot of conditions that were very adverse, and as I grew older, got more education, got more involved civically and creatively within communities, it became a great passion and trajectory for my own life to be committed into public service and being a thinker and a doer within communities. And once I learned about the CGIU coming as a Brown School student, as a WashU alum as well, that just drew my interest naturally. And I knew that I wanted to engage more, to learn more, to really spark some new ideas as well. And that is what led to the development of Design Serves.
It sounds like a perfect fit between what you want to do and what your experience is and with this whole initiative.
Definitely.
Dave, how about you?
So my group has been at the law school actually for, we just are wrapping up our fourth semester. And one challenge that we've been facing is how to make it a permanent institution at the law school, how to make sure it keeps going once some of the founders take off after they graduate. And so when CGIU came and we saw the list of skill sessions and networking opportunities to learn about how other people have been specific and have been successful in the past at establishing their various projects, we thought it would be a great opportunity to learn. Basically, the main emphasis is learning.
Amanda, back to you. With regard to the students coming in from all over the world, as it turns out, how are they selected, or do they select you?
That's a great question. Actually, CGIU runs a very competitive process. There are three criteria. One is that the idea needs to be new, in as much as there are new ideas. But it's new to you, mm-hmm. new to your area, new to the community that you're focusing on. The second is that it's specific. It's not enough to say that I want to alleviate poverty. How am I going to do it? So actually working through the activities and the specifics connected to that. And then the third criteria, which I really appreciate, and we have received feedback from CGIU about the Washington University students' ability to do this, it's to evaluate, to be accountable. It's not enough to say that you will do something, but to work in partnership with others, you need to be transparent, that this is really about leadership and holding yourselves accountable. If you're going to work with 100 families around their relocation efforts and learning the economy in a new area, then did 100 people participate and what was their experience? So those were the three criteria that CGIU applied to the applications that were received.
How many students from Washington University are going to be involved, or from the St. Louis area for that matter?
That's great. So this is one of the reasons they picked us, is that they knew that there was this healthy civic impulse on our campus. We have 201 students of the 1,200 that are from Washington University. And of the 201, there are 117 projects. So there are a number of students that are actually collaborating across disciplines and schools.
Hmm. Do you find this process and the weekend potential at all intimidating?
Not necessarily. There is a sense to represent myself well, represent my initiative well, represent my school well, but I see it more so as a learning experience to take the knowledge from so many accomplished and inspiring leaders and thought figures, but not necessarily to be intimidated by them. And a big part of that thinking and that reasoning is primarily because in order to get to where they are, and as a young person, aspire towards the accomplishments, the achievements, the impact that a lot of these leaders have been making, well, we have to see ourselves as growing towards that same role, growing towards that same lifestyle. And so intimidation really isn't a big factor for me.
How about you?
I think I'm just excited. I participated last week in an event on campus, which Amanda may talk more about, called Faces of Hope. And what we did is all the WashU students who are going to be there this weekend showcase their projects. And there's just some really amazing stuff going on that these students are working on. And so I'm just excited to network with them and learn more about what they're doing and how I can take some of their successes and apply those to our project.
Alongside that, a lot of the projects that are being represented by Washington University students, especially those that were showcased at the Faces of Hope, a lot of conversations emerge from that about how do we collaborate. And you would see people who would have ideas that were not so disparate to where in the future we can't work together. And that was a beautiful experience to have, to know that even though I have my project and my team is working on something, well, we can also get involved with other people's projects as well.
I thought you wanted to add something.
Well, I was just going to say, yeah, we've been here for four semesters, as I mentioned, and so we had a lot of groups come up to us at Faces of Hope who are looking to work with St. Louis schools in various capacities, and we had a lot of fruitful conversations about how they can navigate that successfully and what we found worked and didn't work.
But let's give the audience some sense of what it is, the project that you're working on. Dee, we'll start with you. Dee Serves.
Yes. So my project or commitment to action is Design Serves, which is also known as Dee Serve. And the main mission of Dee Serve is to provide a design-based entrepreneurial education for youth who are living in underserved and under-resourced areas. And here in St. Louis, we are targeting the Hyde Park community in partnership with the Rebuild Foundation that is operating currently in that particular neighborhood. And with the development of DSERVE, a lot of it stemmed from rural America, which is my focus of research and understanding within the Brown School. And my background, my history, my personal development started in rural America. And a lot of the conditions of segregation, a lot of the conditions of residential vacancy, of residential segregation, all of these things exist in rural America, but they also exist in urban America as well. And the element that a lot of these economic and social divisions that are plaguing a lot of communities, they're affecting the development of the youth within those. But if we can DSERVE really focus on how do we then take a lot of those issues and make those youth who are being affected by them the change makers, the thinkers, the creators of new solutions. And so our initiative is developing a curriculum that will take them through the design process all the way from ideation to prototyping and through to implementation of different venture ideas that will address a lot of these issues of residential vacancy, social division, and even food access within these communities. So essentially, with DSERVE, the youth are identifying what they feel they deserve in their community, but they're using design and entrepreneurship to create those solutions themselves. And that's a big part of it.
How long you've been at work in Hyde Park area on this?
So with the larger project, we've started in 2011. A lot of the conversations with Hyde Park and with Rebuild started soon after, but we've been hands-on in that particular community since last September.
And when you say we, who is we? You've got
yes.
a team of some sort.
Yes. So DSERVE is actually a project and initiative underneath my team, which is Catalyst by Design, another enterprise that has been in development since my undergraduate experiences at Washington University, and it is comprised of various alumni who are working on our founding team, as well as a lot of mentors who are stemmed from the Washington University community and a lot of other national communities as well, to really allow us to create a design agency that utilizes and centers our works around human-centered design. And that's an entire new playing field within the design industry. And
go ahead. I'm not interrupting.
Oh, no problem. And with all of these works, it's about how do we utilize creative practice to really create tangible outcomes for social development, economic development within communities.
All right. I have to take a break now and come back, and we'll talk to Dave about what he's doing too. But you must be very, very proud when you hear young people like this talking about that kind of commitment, Amanda.
I am very proud. I've known Dee since she was an undergrad.
We'll have to take that break. We'll do so. By the way, the weekend Clinton Global Initiative University, as I think you've probably figured out by now, is happening all weekend at Washington University. Everyone here in studio is participating. We'll be learning more about all of this as we continue. With me in studio, Dr. Amanda Moore McBride, Associate Dean for Social Work at the Brown School of Social Work at Washington University, just one of many hats that she wears over there. Also with me in studio is Dee Nichols and Dave Collier, participants in the Clinton Global Initiative University. Back to continue our conversation in just a moment. If you'd like to come into it, please do so. 382-8255 is the number. That's 382-TALK. You can send us an email at talk@stlpublicradio.org. We will, of course, take a tweet at STL on Air. You can reach us through Facebook. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again and welcome back as we continue our conversation on the Clinton Global Initiative University, which is, it's a meeting which is being held here at Washington University this weekend, in which people from all over the world, young people primarily, are coming here to talk about projects and initiatives that they could become involved in that will help make this world of ours a better place. We've just heard from Dee Nichols, who is with the Brown School, she's a student at the Brown School, and the project she's working on called DSERVE. We have with us also in studio Dave Collier, who has his own project going. Dave, tell us what you're up to over there.
Sure. I'm part of a group at Washington University Law School called the Marshall Brennan Constitutional Literacy Project. And Marshall Brennan is actually a network of several law schools. And what we do here in St. Louis is we place law students into a St. Louis high school to teach a semester-long course on civics, the court system, and constitutional law as it applies to students. And we've been doing this now for about four semesters. We started in early 2011 here in St. Louis, and we've been working with Northwest High School, Northwest Academy of Law, excuse me, which is at Riverview Boulevard in I-70. So far, it's been a fantastic opportunity for all involved. It's been an opportunity for the school because they have a unique course offering that they can offer to their high school students. It's been a great opportunity for law students because we get to take them out of the law school bubble and into the St. Louis community where they can really immerse themselves. You know, unlike a lot of projects you see students having out in the community, it isn't a service learning component. It isn't an after-school program. Our teaching fellows are in there 3 days a week teaching a full class, doing the lesson planning, doing the teaching, doing the grading. And so it's a really hands-on opportunity to work with these kids. And our commitment to action for the weekend is that we're hoping to expand to five St. Louis high schools by 2016. And if we can do that successfully, we'll be affecting hundreds of St. Louis students.
And what do you hope that the outcome will be? I mean, I know you're talking only about a few semesters that you've been mm-hmm. involved in this, but have you seen any tangible results or any movement toward whatever that outcome might be?
Well, I think the teachers have seen, you know, obvious substantive results. You know, civic education is a real issue. It's a national issue. I think there was a study out of the Department of Education in 2010 where only 24% of American high school seniors are proficient in civic. They call it civic fluency. And so there's a real substantive bonus here where the students are learning real stuff about civics in the court system. You know, it's a pretty practical matter that everyone's going to interact with the court system at some point. And so, you know, how do cases work? What's the difference between a state case and a federal case? And how do they move through the system? And then we've seen a real mentoring impact, too, with this between the students and the teachers. They've established long relationships that exist after the class is over and continue. You know, I'm going to apply to college. I need help. And, you know, give me some advice on what to do with my application. So it's been really positive so far.
And Dee, what about you? What have you seen in terms of consequences of what you're doing?
When it comes to consequences and outcomes in general, there are always consequences, of course, but I think I see more so the positive outcomes that could come from an opportunity like DSERV and students being able to develop transferable skills that will not only help them in the classroom, but also when it comes to career development and attaining jobs. And in addition to that, using those skills and using that knowledge to then make an impact where they actually live and take it by the helms and say that we're doing this. We're starting not just a project, but we're starting a movement amongst youth.
Amanda, with the number of projects that you're going to be dealing with over the course of this weekend, do you find that there are I'm having trouble figuring out how to say this. What we're talking about here, basically dealing with young people and disadvantaged, mm-hmm. underserved mm-hmm. young people. Is that primarily where folks are coming from at this particular conference in terms of their projects?
So that's a great question, Don. And I would say every discipline and every innovation possible is really represented. We have two very socially based examples here, reflecting not just on Washington University's projects, but those from other students. The engineering field has really emerged as a leader in thinking about solutions to entrenched public health issues in particular, and I'll just use that as an example. One of the most successful projects that has come out of CGIU 4 years ago, a group of students proposed Socket. And that group, it's a soccer ball that is a solar panel. Mm-hmm. And so as the young people kick the soccer ball, then in the developing world, they don't have electricity in their homes, but they're able to take those soccer balls into their homes. And then at night, they're able to bring light to their home.
You plug them in.
That's right. You can plug them in. And the outcome that they have seen from that project is that those two students are more likely to stay in school because they can actually study. They can engage with their coursework than outside of out of the school. So that's an engineering example. Right here at Washington University, I was really intrigued at Faces of Hope last week to learn about a project that combines engineers with landscape landscape architects to think about the land, the vacant land issue in North City, and the abatement that has to happen of the soil that's on those properties to be able to turn them into community gardens or to other productive assets for the community. And they have actually identified plants that will suck a tremendous amount of toxins at a higher rate than just normal weeds, I suppose. And how can they utilize that technology then to speed this process, which really then contributes to larger urban development issues?
I think we can segue from what you've just said to a caller, Richard in St. Louis, who's been waiting. I think we might have a match here. Go ahead, Richard.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, thank you. Yes, I had a question on just what was mentioned about community gardens. I and a friend have been working on a solar thermal technology that uses sunlight, it heats up water, and it can be used in greenhouses, and it saves on the natural gas bill. It was developed at the Colorado State University, and it was tested in Colorado under Colorado sun conditions, and it is low cost. It could be used in developing countries, but it could be adapted to greenhouses, make the greenhouse stay heated 12 months of the year if you have insulation and all that. Do you have any comment on a connection with the project you just mentioned?
I think there may be one. There is a component in all of this that I think it's about ideas into action. It's one thing to have an idea. It's one thing to have a technology. But it's the partnership and the connection for implementation. And so, Richard, I think that's actually what you're dealing with there. There's a great idea. There's a great technology. But then how do you connect it to organizations or to communities where it can be implemented? I would encourage you to reach out to Gateway Greening here in St. Louis. They are known for their support of the community garden movement in particular.
And that's one of the values I gather of this conference this weekend. People like Dave and Dee here, yeah. If they have other ideas that they can kind of bring them up with some of their peers.
That's
and
right.
Maybe get some action going in these areas.
I mean, I think the trickiest part is always, you know, it's easy to come up with a good idea. It's easy to get it started with a few friends or with colleagues that you have. One of the hardest things, though, is, you know, if you go somewhere or if your people who are doing the project are leaving, how do you make it a permanent institution for good in the community? How does it keep going? I think that's one of the main values where you learn those sorts of skills at the conference.
Well, it brings to mind another question that I had was, but you guys are going to graduate eventually, I assume. What happens to your projects when you do go away? Dee?
Yeah, so a fortunate thing about DServe is that with our partnerships, we're developing it with the Rebuild Foundation here in St. Louis, and a big hope is that it would be sustained through, or the goal is that it will be sustained through that particular organization, but also in partnership with one of the student groups at the Brown School that is really on the front lines of helping to develop it, which is the Community Arts Initiative. And a big part of our aim right now, because we're in the development stage, we're at the forefront of this, reaching our tipping point, we're creating as many partnerships on campus, in the community, through our networks, in order to sustain this so that once we leave and our individual selves are out of it, not only do the youth have the capacity to sustain it, but also our partner organizations. In the long term scheme of things as well, with DServe, we've already started communicating with other universities like Furman University and Tulane in New Orleans to replicate and scale this project to those communities as well.
Did you have something today?
Yeah, so the thing about teaching is that in order to be a good teacher, you have to put a lot of time into it. And so what we've been doing so far with our teaching fellows is what we call the law students who are in the classroom, is giving them practicum credit while they're doing it so they can take one less law class and have time to do the teaching. And so one thing that we've been working on, how it continues after I graduate and after other members graduate, is what sort of permanent model is going to be the best fit to keep it going at the law school. So it's a matter of getting faculty support and administrative support and working with high schools so that there's a permanent connection between the law school and the high schools.
Amanda, this is a critical component, it would appear to me, because if these fine young people go off someplace else and their projects wither, no one is well served by that.
This reflects a primary value of Washington University. The Gephardt Institute has actually embraced CGI as an opportunity to focus on this as a value at our university. So we have had programming over the past year, the workshops that our own students had to go through. We didn't just let them apply. They came to workshops and they learned, what does it mean to create a project that is specific and is measurable? And that partnership is at the core of that. We also have worked on the capacity of our faculty and staff to support our students, whether they're in the engineering school, architecture, law, or arts and sciences. We brought in the Project for Civic Reflection 2 weekends ago from Chicago to train our faculty and staff on how do you support students to ask the right questions, to think about these critical issues in terms of sustainability. We also made a commitment to following up with those students who will remain on campus this next year to follow them through their projects and to brainstorm with them around strategies and to help them track their outcomes.
I was just looking at my notes here because I thought I had recalled that Dee's project is being highlighted, as I understand it, at the weekend meeting, correct?
Yes.
How so?
Well, in various ways, Saturday, there will be a press conference that will include DServe within it, on-site interviews, and then in one of the sessions, which is titled Poverty and Opportunity in America's Rust Belt, that is also a session where DServe will be highlighted as a project, and we will receive a certificate, be placed on stage, and that's just a big honor and a great testament to the potential that not only my project but other projects have, and it's a very humbling experience.
You're going to have to hustle a little bit, Dave.
I know, it sounds like it. Although I should make one plug, which is that one of our former teaching fellows for Marshall Brennan is actually going to be on one of the panels at the
great
event. Her name's Kaylee Berger, and she's out of town right now, but she's going to be here this weekend, so we're really excited
great
to see her.
That sounds wonderful. Let's take another call. Tom wants to join us from Afton. Go ahead, Tom. You're on the air.
Thank you, Don. When I was an undergraduate on the East Coast, I learned a lot about my hometown, a lot about St. Louis. I was an undergraduate at Yale, and there was a lot of activism there on behalf of poor people in New Haven and that area and homelessness. And I remember thinking, I realized from being there that WashU was a very competitive institution. And I remember thinking, gosh, I never knew about anyone at WashU doing this sort of thing in St. Louis. And so I'm glad to hear about these projects. Then I would hear students who were going to medical school saying, I got into WashU Medical School. The only thing is that it's in St. Louis. I have to live in St. Louis. And so what I'm hoping is that since over the last 20 or 30 years, the attitudes of some WashU students towards St. Louis have changed, and maybe the attitudes of St. Louisans towards WashU students have changed, so that that's not an impediment, because I had the impression years ago that WashU students sort of regretted that their university was located here in St. Louis. Part of it's because of the weird statistics we get with that county-city divide. But I'd like to hear about the town-gown sort of relationships with WashU and the rest of the community.
Well, thank you so much for the call, Tom. I'll turn that over to Amanda. Poor St. Louis. I mean, St. Louis, we have an inferiority complex as it is, and there is just certain things, among them some that Tom mentioned, that just to add to that.
Tom, I'll put this in the context of really the last 15 years. The students that we have on campus today have come of age in a time of great tumult and question of rights and responsibilities. So everything from 9/11 to Hurricane Katrina to larger economic issues. And what we are seeing on our campus, both among our undergrad and graduate student population, is a real sense of responsibility, that I can't wait for someone else to do this. If I see a problem, it's my responsibility to stand up and do something about that. It's one thing, however, to have passion. It's another thing then to have the skills and knowledge necessary to do that. There's been a landslide change at our institution that has focused on our larger mission of education, and that it's education around those rights and responsibilities as active citizens. So in that way, our entire institution has embraced training this next generation of civic leaders. Across all of our schools, we have courses that are based in the community that are applying our students' budding knowledge with real problems that are faced, and providing then the faculty expertise to guide them through that process. Right now, at the undergraduate level, at any given time, about 70% of our students are engaged in the community in some way, which is higher than most of our peer institutions. Now, that's just a number. I think what's more meaningful is the tangible impact and change that I hear from the community. The Gephardt Institute runs a number of community service programs, and what I've been in the St. Louis community for 20 years, and what I'm hearing now is that the equation is changing. It's not what can students get out of the experience, but what can they contribute and leave behind. So a real tenor change in terms of the town-gown relationship and how our students engage with St. Louis. As for our inferiority complex and how CGIU may help with this, so let's just think about proportions. 200 of our students out of 1,200 will be represented. You break that across the skill sessions, the knowledge sessions, and our students are going to be incredibly represented. They are leaders then among the leaders and have an opportunity to talk about their projects and to talk about St. Louis. So I think this is, I've heard the chancellor refer to CGIU as a punctuation mark, and I think it has an incredible opportunity for WashU and St. Louis.
And by the way, I can't think of any student who is ambitious and who is seeking a career in medicine or the law or in the area of social work, who wouldn't be thrilled to be going to Washington University, certainly one of the very best in the country in all of these areas. Okay, that's my two cents. I got to take another break. Let's do that now. We'll come back and continue our conversation about the weekend Clinton Global Initiative University that is taking place at Washington University this weekend. Back in a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again and welcome back. We are talking in this program about the weekend Clinton Global Initiative University at Washington University. It's designed to facilitate calls to action in areas such as education, environment and climate change, human rights, poverty alleviation, and public health. My guests in studio are Dr. Amanda Moore McBride, Associate Dean for Social Work at the Brown School of Social Work at Washington University. Dean Nichols and Dave Collier are participants in the Clinton Global Initiative University. And we certainly want to take your calls if you folks want to get into this conversation. I'm particularly interested in what you think could be the biggest challenges that need solution, and some of which may be addressed this weekend at Washington University. Dave Collier, let me come back to you with regard to funding your project. I assume it costs something to do what you're doing, or does it? And if so, where does the money come from?
Yeah, that's a recurring question that we deal with sometimes is funding. And it does cost money to, you know, school supplies, books, very, very basic things cost money. And we've had success in a couple different ways. There's a donor network for Marshall Brennan that has been very generous in the past and has helped us with textbooks, for example. And the law school has been generous and given us some funding out of their budget that we can use on an annual basis. And this is one of the benefits, again, I'll come back to it, of the weekend, because you know, you can go to a skill session on fundraising and learn how these things work best and what's the best road to try to take to have more success in that area.
Dee, how about you?
Yes, so with DSERV, I've been very fortunate to receive the support of the Sodexo Foundation and Youth Service America as two really big funders in the opportunity right now. And in addition to that, with the partnership with the Rebuild Foundation, there's also that financial support that comes from the National Endowment for the Arts. And currently, we're still nurturing a lot of great relationships with other funders, with other partners as well, who will not only bring different skills and tangible resources, but also those financial resources. And that's something that is definitely needed when you're really trying to start a big idea.
I think we're seeing a sea change in the social sector in thinking about solutions to critical issues. And it relates to this notion of measurement and transparency and accountability. And funders want to know what their return on investment will be. So that's why we're seeing an emphasis on what will that outcome be? Yeah. And really, what will it cost me to achieve an empowered young person in Hyde Park?
I would assume, and it's never a good idea to assume anything anymore, that the whole funding issue might be problematical right now because of the economic situation for everybody at every level.
It is problematic, but I think that's what's so exciting about this weekend is that what will be on display are some of the more innovative strategies to leverage support, everything from matching dollars to utilizing social media to raise funds.
Well, it's also my understanding that there is some seed money that is available through the weekend. Where is that coming from and how much is involved?
So there are actually three different sources. One is through a new network that was created this year, the CGIU University Network. So other colleges and universities have actually joined this network with a $10,000 contribution to then fund some aspect of their sponsored students' projects. So in addition to their travel expenses to attend the meeting, they receive funds then to actualize those. The Gephardt Institute itself gave out funding for our students. We also see the Resolution Social Venture Challenge. The Resolution Project is giving out $100,000 to participating students this year. Those students were notified in advance of this weekend, and they will actually have a venue where they do an elevator pitch to present their idea, and then at the end of the conference, they will be announced.
Are either of you guys in the running for any of any of those dollars?
No, I don't think so. But we're always keeping our eye out for new grant opportunities. You know, we're in as I mentioned earlier, without getting into too much of the nitty gritty. You know, we're a student practicum right now, where students receive credit in order to do part of this teaching aspect, and so you run into various hurdles when you're applying for funds when there's also credit involved. And so we're always keeping our eye out for unique grant opportunities that will work for us.
Where do you think all of this is going to take you? And I'll start with you, Dave. Where do you think this is going to take you following graduation? I mean, obviously, you've already got a commitment, as I understand it, for a local law firm. But where do you go from here, given what you've done?
So personally, my goal is to remain involved as some sort of external board member and to try and be at least one influence that helps keep this moving in St. Louis and sees through the commitment to five high schools by 2016. At the law school level, it's a matter, again, of exploring different models and finding with what works to make sure that each year we're getting built interest, we're getting, you know, phenomenal student applicants who want to go teach in the high school, and we're building really good relationships with local high schools to keep it going.
And Dee, how do you want this all to wind up for you?
Yes, so my personal goal is to stay here in St. Louis after graduation and just really see the actualization of DSERV and Catalyst by Design to new skills and new communities. With DSERV specifically, we've already identified and started building those relationships with five different markets that we want to take the initiative into, including Greenville, South Carolina, Chicago, Illinois, West Helena, Arkansas, New Orleans, which is the biggest one right now, and then Denver, Colorado. And with these commitments from students and faculty of universities like Furman and Tulane, that's how we really want to scale. But right now, a big part of that is building that model to where everything will be sustainable and easily replicable.
How did you select these particular cities, Steve?
To be honest, a lot of it came from sharing the idea very early on and connecting with bodies of individuals and catalysts who share these same values, share these same visions for their communities, and they just happen to be connected to resources and institutions like universities and Canon Design and Third Teacher Plus, all of these organizations that have the capacity to implement something like DSERV. So building those partnerships has really been coming very naturally. With the initiative at Tulane, a lot of that stemmed from attending a conference, the Ashoka U conference that just happened in February. And the action that came from that conversation stemmed very immediately after that experience. And it's just a matter of identifying those common needs, those common desires, those common visions, and making the idea happen.
You're not from St. Louis, are you?
No, I'm not. I am from Memphis, Tennessee.
All right. Well, we're delighted to hear that you're going to stay in St. Louis.
Yes.
And to our earlier caller, the inferiority complex ends when talented people decide to stay in St. Louis. Dave?
I was just going to say I'm also not from St. Louis, so there's one more person who's going to stay.
I'm going to stay in St. Louis. Well, you know, that is terrific. We've done programs here on the difficulty this community sometimes have in attracting intelligent people and their brain power to come in and make this an even better community. And there's a brain drain factor, too. A lot of people leave for a lot of different reasons. So, Maddie, you're nodding. You're right on this page, aren't you?
I am. Actually, the Gephardt Institute has been lobbied by a group of students to create an Urban Fellows program, which would be a postgraduate program that allows students an entree, really, into civic leadership roles in the mayor's office, the county exec, and other leadership organizations. And that's among our undergrad population. Mm-hmm. So there's a real thrust to invest and to contribute to St. Louis and its civic fabric.
What do a lot of celebrity involvement this weekend? You mentioned Stephen Colbert is going to be here. Was it Jack Dorsey of Twitter? That man has done fairly well
right.
for himself.
That's right. St. Louis.
That's right. Yep. Bill and Chelsea Clinton are also going to be here. Mm-hmm. Let's start with someone like Stephen Colbert. Aside from his marquee value and the fact that he might help draw some people into town to see him, what does he bring to the table?
I think the role of the media has really been called into question, again, if we use this time horizon of the last 15 years. And what is the role of the media? And in as much as he and Jon Stewart have in some ways launched a different type of news, he represents the importance of information and truth to power and thinking in many ways differently about the social issues, the economic issues, the political issues that we face. So I see his contribution to this generation as having helped them frame the issues.
You know, a lot of people would like to be over there and watch him do whatever he's going to do as well as watch the others. Is this event at all open to the public?
Thank you, Don, for asking that. It is not. This is President Clinton's wish that it is focused on the students and those who have been accepted. However, I think it will be available on your website later. There are a number of links where the public can follow the information. And the plenary sessions, Friday evening, Saturday at noon, and then Saturday afternoon, will in some portion be available via live stream. We also have heard that Stephen Colbert will be filming a portion of his show. It is unclear when that show will be on the air on Comedy Central, but sometime in the next week.
One of the earlier callers had talked about an idea that he had with regard to utilizing water and water resources. I'm sure there are a lot of people out there who may not go to any kind of a university who have good ideas. Do you have any thoughts or ideas that you can pass along right now to them for, you know, nurturing whatever projects they have in mind who can't be a part of this?
Well, I'm a social worker, so I believe in social networks and social capital, and it's all about connection and sharing your ideas. You asked earlier whether Dee and Dave were intimidated by this experience. You can't be intimidated. It really is embracing the notion that one person can change the world, but you need to galvanize a few more people behind you to do that. And so making those connections and speaking out, that's where it all starts.
There's nothing like networking, correct?
Yeah.
I have an email here from Tyrone, which I'll read, concerning the civics program at Northwest High School. This is kind of related to what we're talking about. A very exceptional program for students in our district. My niece is a member of the Supreme Court. She has also been going through offers from numerous colleges and apprenticeships. Thanks for providing such a wonderful program to students who really need the guidance. This is what you want to hear, isn't it? And Dee, particularly with the kind of work you're doing, and certainly with you too, Dave, getting that kind of feedback from students.
I find it amazing, simply amazing. And I know for myself and for the initiatives and the ambitions that I had as a student, and to hear that and now be on the other side of working with students, One thing that I envision when it comes to their civic engagement and their development is that we can start to see our communities as our classrooms and the solutions that we help students create as the standardized test. You know, that their assignments would be the actions that they take to make the world better. And that is just really amazing to hear. And I wish that individual all the best, definitely.
And I'm sure, Dave, you're on the same page.
Oh, for sure. I mean, when it comes down to it, and maybe this sounds cliche, but it really is about the high school students and about the experience that they can gain from this. You know, the law student is full of students with diverse backgrounds and unique skills, and to be able to get them into these classrooms and, you know, work closely with some of these students, I think it can have a big impact. And in fact, today, I think already, one of our high school class is traveling to D.C. to participate in a national moot court competition. Mm-hmm. So I want to wish them luck this weekend. I think it's going to go really well. So,
boy, that's so great to hear. Let's bring another listener into the conversation. Jamie in St. Louis, go ahead. You're on the air.
Well, thank you. This sounds like an exciting program, very cutting edge. I'm kind of an old-fashioned English teacher, though, and I wonder if there was any role in the program that they're devising for literature, the arts, dance, something of an artistic nature. And I'd be delighted if they would start their answer not with the word so. Thank you.
Okay.
Well, thank you. On behalf of what we're really doing with DServe, when it comes to the liberal arts and the humanities, we see an opportunity for students to learn and develop those skills in learning literature, those skills in learning grammar, and engaging with the arts and creative practice through this particular initiative, through the things and the experiences that they are creating. And a big way that we see that is that in order to really develop a solution for your community, well, you have to know your community. And how do you then engage with people's stories, their personal narratives? How do you learn the history of the neighborhood? How do you learn the issues? And that requires a lot of tangible skills that students have to learn academically. And so a big part of our vision is to provide opportunities to have those skills be implemented while developing another venture.
There's actually a video screening this Saturday night called Room at the Table. So the students that are in attendance have the option of viewing this film. It's about hunger and homelessness in the United States, and it raises a number of critical questions on food access and how to structure that. So that's one area in which we've integrated the arts into the program.
You know, we had a conversation yesterday with Caroline Kennedy, who was in the studio and talking about early childhood education and the arts and teaching to the test. And one of the things that keeps coming up is the fact that we're teaching to the test, but we're not teaching the humanities anymore. The arts and music and things like that are getting lost in the shuffle. Do you share that concern?
I do share that concern. Yeah. And I'm delighted that the Brown School of Social Work has been a leader in this area. DEES actually represents a body of students who are pressing us to embrace the arts in community practice. And as a matter of fact, there will be a small symposium hosted by the Pulitzer Foundation for the Arts and the Brown School this summer to think about training. How do we train the next generation of practitioners to utilize the arts for community development?
Dave, go ahead.
I would just add that I have a background in the humanities. I was a graduate student in the humanities before law school. And I think the caller would be reassured to hear that in the substantive learning of something like constitutional law, what we're really teaching the students at the end of the day is how to read critically, how to read closely, and to work with language in a way that they can then transfer that to become productive citizens. So there's a lot of a lot of things working in tandem with the humanities when it comes to studying law.
Dee, do you have a thought on that?
Well, for myself, I actually am coming from a background in the fine arts. As an undergrad, I studied at the Sam Fox School of Design, and I get the question a lot, well, why would an art student be interested in a social work program? And it's because a lot of these creative practices, they include a lot of the social issues that we're engaging in social work. And the biggest difference is that we're using different vocabulary. So how do you synthesize that vocabulary, and how do you synthesize these processes that we're both using and really engage from that perspective?
Did you want to have a final thought, Amanda? Because we're going to have to say goodbye very quickly.
I would like to add this. In this notion of sustainability, on Sunday, concluding the conference, is a service project at Gateway STEM High School where about 800 of the student participants will convene. I have to give credit to Cheryl Adelstein in our Office of Government and Community Relations and Stephanie Kurtzman at the Gephardt Institute for working with Beth Bender, the principal there, to develop a number of projects that will add and contribute to the students' education over the long term there.
Hope you have a great weekend. Amanda Moore McBride, thank you so much for being with us. Dee Nichols, great to see you. Congratulations
you.
And good luck over the weekend. And Dave Collier, same to you. Great meeting you all, and I know you're going to be very, very successful as you move along. Thank you. Join Steve Potter tomorrow for Cityscape when he'll talk with cultural commentator and blogger Lee Rosenbaum, and then we'll take a look at the Fox Charitable Foundation's Teen Talent Competition and the St. Louis Poetry Center's National Poetry Month celebration featuring the work of Emily Dickinson. Monday on St. Louis on the Air, we'll talk about with David Sheff about his new book on preventing and treating drug addiction. Archive versions of past St. Louis on the Air programs available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org. St. Louis on the Air, a production of St. Louis Public Radio 90.7 KWMU. Thanks for listening. I'm Don Marsh.